Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back Lane Kawaoka. Hi, Lane.
Hey, Mike. How's it going? Good to see you guys again.
Yeah, likewise. Good to see you. Are you still hanging out in Hawaii?
Yep, that's where I'm at. Haven't run off to Mexico or fled the country. We're going to stay put and we're going to get through this, right?
Yeah, I'll be enjoying at least nice weather. We'll jump straight into the conversation. So we are kind of recording this in mid-March 2024. You're an operator of many multifamily assets, and there are many friends that I have who are operators of multifamily assets. And it's kind of like a winter time in the multifamily after the last couple of years. And I'll do my standard speech, and then you can give me a little color what you're seeing out there. So, you know, I thank the Fed and I blame the Fed. They got us all addicted and used to the low interest rates for too long, to the zero interest rate policy, kept the rates super low. And the market kept doing well. It kept kind of, the properties continued to increase in value, driven by the support from the low interest rate environment. And then 21, 22, they withdrew the interest rates fast and furious, and some of those deals acquired in those years. Well, they started hiking in 22, but the deals acquired in 21 and 22, and some even earlier years, are experiencing pressure from these high interest rates. And the pressure is immense. And it's not just the fact that they hiked, but the fact that keeping the rates higher for longer. So, and it becomes liquidity drain on many projects, and projects didn't prepare for this. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I mean, what I tell my folks from a high level, and then we can definitely dive in. I mean, 40-year high interest rates, quickest time in history. Me being my old life as an engineer, you know, part of that was like floodplain analysis and stuff like that. Well, normally when you go into a deal, you build the bridge for a 50, 70-year flood. But we got hit by a 150-year flood, essentially. So, basically what we see now, because the interest rates skyrocketed, the buyers came out of the market. And personally, I'm a buyer too, right? We operate multifamily assets. We haven't bought anything since the summer of 2022. Why? Well, of course, the interest rates went up, but the biggest thing is the loan to values that I'm able to get. I'm not able to get 70% loan to value. Right now, the capital markets are only giving 50% for the same loans 2 years ago, which means that I got to bring a whole bunch more to the table, which ultimately means my return on investment metrics and economics go down for investors. Therefore, the deal doesn't pencil anymore, which is why we, and I would say, market volumes have gone down, transaction volumes have gone down to maybe about a fourth of what it was, or maybe even less, which is why the all market assets have come down about 30% off the highs for the most part.
That's a great observation. Transaction volume, you have it a one fourth. I have it down 70%, very close. So we're very close. 25% what it used to be, one fourth. Pricing 30%, I guess it depends on the market. I've seen a broad range, anywhere from lower, let's just call 10 to 20 in the steady Eddie markets. And then some of the most cyclical markets are even over 40%. So 30% number is not a surprise. It certainly falls within the possible range. Are you seeing that adjustment on a lot of projects, or is this just an exception? This is more like, like you said, a 150-year flood. I like to use the word a tsunami wave. It doesn't happen often. It's kind of hit the entire industry all at the same time. And it hit it so hard and so heavy that many operators and sponsors are dealing with all these problems all at the same time. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a federal thing, right? Federal impacts the whole nation in terms of interest rates. You know, of course, we've always said, you know, look at the micro market, the MSA, you know, certain places like Phoenix, we're involved in Phoenix, like Atlanta, certain markets like
Both
that have
are
gotten
really
hit
bad
and
markets. They probably two of the worst hit markets, right?
right. Other ones, like you said, some of the steady Eddie ones maybe came down slightly, some maybe even stayed neutral, but I'm just speaking in generalities, right? Like 30% to maybe 10% on some of the less felt ones, but this is systemic, right? It's not like a market. It's, and we're seeing exactly how this, the lesson learned that I'm taking away from this is to do real estate, it's very dependent on what the borrowing rates is. You need leverage to do real estate because real estate typically is very steady. Therefore, you need to use leverage to magnify those returns. And therefore, it's very dependent when you, in terms of buyers and sellers, which impact the prices.
I agree with you 100%. Real estate, because of a high leverage in general in that sector, it trades very, very dependently to the interest rates. So the interest rates were moved, and again, we're preaching the same thing, but they were moved from 0 to 0.25% on the Fed funds rate, all the way to 5.25 to 5.5, and it's not, that they went up 525 basis points. If you compare the price of a treasury bond, they went up 40-fold. The crazy part is, depending on a point of view, these impacts are just gigantic. And then if you are a borrower, your debt service has gone up sometimes double, sometimes triple, depending on what spread the bank charge you over the Fed funds rate. So, and then the other really good point you said, and it's the point of leverage. Leverage used to be plentiful. In some cases, standard 75% leverage were pushed to 85%. In some cases, were even more. While today, 50% money is hard to get, 50% leverage. So it's, the pendulum swung to the opposite direction in an extreme manner. So, but let's go back. What's happening with these investments from the last couple of years? Again, just hypothetically, people wrote a check in the market that dropped 30-35% from a couple of years ago. What's happening to equity investors? Are they wiped out? Do they have any hope of recovery? Or it's kind of one of these things, once you're out of cash and you default on a mortgage, you lose the asset to the bank sooner or later.
And I think it even transcends the whole, like, we used to be able to say, well, if you're cash flowing, you're fine, right? You can live to fight another day. But that enters in the second part of the equation, the second to kiss of death, is if your loan is renewing in this temporary time when the cap rates are elevated, which is probably anything prior to 2026, right? We don't know, but just using that as a working point out there. You're going to be forced to refinance in this lower evaluation period. And I'm just a dumb real estate operator. I'm not an economist or anything like that. But like the analogy that I think of is, all right, we got hit by this flood and Mike and I built this sand wall barrier, right? And normally we like to be very conservative and build the wall pretty high and to, more than account for a, 5, 10, 15% correction in the market. But what we saw here when you're talking 20, 30% plus is a lot of places the water level has breached the sandbag level. And now that's just a kind of a way to think about it, in analogy form. But, let's talk specifically maybe about a deal, right? Like, say you bought a property at $100 million. And now that property is maybe you didn't buy at the peak and maybe it's worth 75 now, only 25% less. But your bank note is pretty dang close to that level. Let's call it 75 or 70 million dollars. Now you're at neutrality. And what a lot of people have heard about cash out refinances, that's when we all like jump for joy because we got lucky that we were in a cap rate compression market. But this is a situation if you're forced to refinance, which you're renewing debt prior to 2026, now you're going to have to do what's called a cash-in refinance. Where, and to the second part of this, the whammy, double whammy is not at 70% loan to value anymore. It ain't 2021 anymore, 2020 when it was free money. It's at 50% loan to value. So if your asset is worth now 75 million, they're only going to give you a loan for that half. And And therefore, you're going to need to be coming with a huge amount of cash in refinance to the table. And this is kind of what's creating this really bigger issue than I think a lot of investors have kind of come to me and say, hey, I just want a third, like another eyes on this. Like, should I be, individual investors saying, like, should I contribute to my capital call? Does this make sense? The biggest mistake I see past investors making is they're keying in on what is the occupancy, right? Are we getting the rent bumps, right? Are we cash flowing? Which in a value add asset, you may not be cash flowing for the first 2 3 years anyway. But is this business plan still alive? And it's gotten to such a point where it doesn't really matter. I've always been a kind of a man of analogies, so go with me here, guys. But it's kind of like, you got a guy who has like six-pack abs. He does CrossFit every single day. Looks great from the outside. And that's like a property that's 95, 99% occupied and just clicking on all cylinders, getting great rep bumps. But in a way, if you've got that, you're staring down the barrel of 6 months or 18 months from now, you got to refinance and you got to bring $10 million to the table. In a way, it's kind of like having some type of stage three pancreatic cancer that is buried beneath there. And so I tell investors, don't look at the outside stuff. First question is, what is this property worth at this point in time? What are the BOVs? And there's obviously a huge range right now, right? Because not a lot of properties are being transacted at. But what is and where is the note value? What is the senior debt? And are you, when you put in 100 grand for your capital call, say, are you putting in an above that line? Or are you putting it underneath that if the property were to be given up and weren't able to make it survive to 2025 is the saying these days, then your money's gone, right? And that's the first question to ask.
So what you're asking is the fundamental valuation versus the debt problem. You're looking at the capital stack. So what you're saying is bringing in any capital in an upside down situation where the value of the debt, first lien debt, is greater than the expected current value, then you're upside down. And then the other question becomes, is this if an additional capital is needed to get the property to whatever stabilization point, will that be based on a future value? Because the
Yeah,
future
it's kind of.
value is a little bit of a uncertain, but at least you got to make some assumptions with the interest rates and the market conditions. But if it's clearly upside down today, then putting any money into the project makes absolutely no sense, because this property can only be turned over to the bank and let the bank deal with the fact that it's owned $70 million and the property is only worth 65 today. But if the property is still worth 70 theoretically, and the bank is owned, sorry, the property, if the bank debt is 70 and the property is owned 75, it can be sold for 75, and theoretically, the owners could still sell and try to recover a couple of cents on a dollar, right?
Correct, but all the passive investors' equity is wiped out at that point, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's the point. Well, if the value dropped from 100 million to 75 and can still be liquidated fast for 75, just as an example, then there's a little bit of money left, but not a lot, because the original equity was 30 million. Maybe there's a recovery 5 million minus closing costs, so probably very, very little at some point. And the other point that you brought, if new money is brought in, the new money has to be at a relatively secure place. So if investors ask for a capital call, and I'm not a big fan of capital calls because of exactly the difficulty they face, whether the property is worth it or not, is it worth to bring in a capital call? But also, as an investor, you don't know if other investors will participate or not. So it's kind of a complex problem where you may want to rescue the property, but other investors don't have that confidence. And the property will not get enough liquidity that it needs, and then it's still got a problem. But I'm going back to your refi exercise. So the refi problem is absolutely humongous if you try to refi today. In other words, if you're trying to refi today at the high interest rates, you can't meet debt service coverage ratio and the bank's requirements. The LTV is super conservative. So today it's a cliff, right? If you're forced to refi right now, it's a big problem. For most folks, the problem may be not today, but 12 to 24 months from now, if you can get there. But I hear you. Today, if you can't refi and the bank calls a note, you're done. You're cooked.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, and it, I think a lot of people, what they do is they just stick their head in the sand and just kind of hold on. And you have an option as a deal sponsor, whether you put your own money in. That's what I kind of did and lost it. Or you go to your investors and do a capital call. And the other thing I think that past investors and deal sponsors need to kind of take a look in the mirror when they do a capital call is what kind of investors do you have? If you have retail investors who are, doctors, dentists, your non-professional investors, they're likely to be very skittish and not do a capital call and maybe contribute one third, is about the industry standard that I've heard out there. If you've got most of your investors, well beyond, $5 million, $20 million net worth, the more on the, the semi family office level, you might do a little bit better. But this is kind of where it makes sense to be a smaller investor amongst bigger fish, where you're investing alongside other $100 million net worth investors, where if there's a $10 million gap into what's needed to get the deal to dry land, specifically speaking, perm debt, getting out of the shorter term debt under 4 years or less, then somebody out of the partnership LPGP needs to write a $10 million check. And that's where I've seen it happen, where you might have 12 guys who each put in a couple million dollars as their initial investment. And it's not the hardest thing in the world for a handful of them to write $1, $2 million each to do what's right. But for 100 doctors, dentists in an investment group, that ain't gonna happen, right? You have some of the most skittish investors, guys who've never owned rental properties, and they don't understand that this stuff could happen. And when it does, everybody needs to suck it up, right? And do what's right. If not, the deal falls in the face and the worst case scenario happens.
So, Lynn, let me ask you this question. So, I concur with you. I've seen these capital calls attempts and then they fail. And you pulled industry stats of a third participation. And I am not questioning that. That's probably about right. And if you have a little more sophisticated investors, you may get a little bit better compliance, but you're still going to get significant non-compliance with the capital call. So, what do you think? And we've certainly been talking about this. We like this concept a lot more. I've been a big supporter of the concept. And it's only applicable. My first requirement is it has to be a Wharfie deal. So if the deal is upside down, I call it non-Wharfie. You don't even go there. It doesn't matter. It's a capital call, or not a dollar of any kind should go in the deal. It's really a bank problem at that point. But let's just call it a Wharfie deal where the property was bought right and it's still not upside down. So an example would be we did a deal. I'm going to use example of a deal. We bought it. We actually were an investor in the deal, but the deal was bought for 97 million, about 23 million invested in the renovations in Indianapolis, very steady market, and all in about 123 million. And valuation at some point was originally underwritten for 160, then with hot market, it went up to about almost 200, maybe 180 to 200, and now it's back down to 160, 165. But the last dollar that the project needs today in the form of capital takes it to only about 124. So you still have a margin of safety between the current value on the as-is basis and the last dollar. So a deal like this is what I call Wharfie deal. It actually justifies writing a fresh check. So what we're doing in this deal is we're doing essentially mezz debt, mezz financing. And we're providing that in the form of less than first out money. It pushes back previously invested equity, even though they may not like it, but at least it gives them a chance to participate in the same round. So the opportunity is existing investors write a check that supersedes your previously invested money in a mezz round on a capital stack. And that money is behind, of course, the previous debt, but at the same time, it's in a safer place than the common equity. And that money has a chance to get the project to the finish line, and then at least you have a pretty good chance of recover that money and get a decent return on that money. And then your previous invested dollars now they have a chance of exit. So what do you think about this idea? Last in for first out, I call it LIFO, just to come in on the right type of deals and give existing investors a chance to participate if they want to. Some of them will be willing, but many will not be willing or will not be able to do, and that's okay. They get their chance, they're not willing to participate, then you go to the external investors and say, okay, this round is in mass, it's in between current common equity and debt, but at least it's in a better position in the capital stack versus capital call.
Yeah, I mean, this may upset some investors that are kind of in that first stack, right? The common equity
Oh,
guys.
absolutely.
There's a
But
bit
they
of
can't survive
this.
without it. That's the point. If you don't
Yeah,
raise the money, you default on a mortgage, you're in worse shape.
and I just want to call it out because I think, there's a bit of entitlement mentality. Like, hey, I invested 200 grand in this deal originally, but last summer 2023, that money was gone, right? That was when the cap rates greatly expanded Q3 and especially Q4 2023, and that money is gone. So I think if you're an investor, I get it. There's a lot of emotion tied up in that position, but you have to see that from a pragmatic standpoint right now. Right now, your equity was gone a long time ago. Sure, you haven't sold and you haven't materialized those losses yet, but it's gone. Without this new rescue capital coming in or mezz debt, you're dead on arrival. It's kind of funny. Like I watch Black Hawk Down. I don't know if you've seen that, Mike, but very famous movie. My wife watched it for the first time. But these guys went out on a mission. In a way, that's kind of like the common equity. And the mission got botched and they needed the rescue squad to come in there. And when you think about it like that, it's like, whatever, I'll give those guys whatever to come save me, right? That's essentially what's the situation we're in now. The guys that were coming in, the rescue debt, the mezz debt, they better get, number one, better placement on the capital stack to be get paid first and a higher return. Because without these guys to save your butt, you're screwed, you're dead.
Yeah, Lane, I appreciate you kind of explaining it in these very simple terms because that's the reality. It's very difficult. These are very difficult conversations with existing investors to tell them that they're sitting on thin ice. That's how I put it. In some cases, you could say completely wiped out. In some other cases, you could say maybe it's worth something, but we don't know what it's worth. But in order for it to be worth something, the property needs to sell. And in this market, you can't even sell the property. It's such a rough market. Because the buyer's experience is so difficult. The buyers demand much better pricing because financing is not available or available at 50% leverage and very expensive rates. So because of that, the buyers are willing to pay very much reduced prices. So you as a seller selling in this market, you're in a pretty bad position. And it is like a 150-year flood that hit us and nobody expected. And these are such difficult conversations with existing investors. Because the more sophisticated they are, the more they understand. But plenty of really smart people who are not professional investors wrote checks for many years successfully, passively into these multifamily and other syndications, did really great on their returns. And they kept investing, 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 in some cases doubling and tripling down. And then the last 2 years just kind of, I don't want to call them wiped them out, but beyond wiped them out. That's a scary part. And in some cases, we don't know the outcomes, but if these projects don't get help, the only place they have to go is down. They're going to sink because they're out of liquidity. Sooner or later, the bank is going to take them. It's either foreclosure or cooperative transfer. So, and that's why,
It's heavy, heavy stuff, right? I mean,
yeah, heavy stuff.
we had a
And
good run for the last decade, and 1 year kind of give it back.
yeah, that's the crazy part. It's almost like this. And then I don't know how else to put it. I just call thank the Fed or blame the Fed. I know I'm repeating myself, but the reality is they kept, you could go back and you can call it the Black Swan event. Fed is, they control monetary policy. They don't control fiscal policy, right? Fiscal policy, what the government did. And then the government printed a lot of money. At the end of the day, inflation is defined number of dollars circulation and number of apples. If you have more dollars than apples, then the price per apple will go up. And ultimately, that's what the government did. COVID hit. They printed a lot of dollars, created inflation. Fed had no choice. They had to hike to fight the inflation as the only real tool that they have. So you can create this logical chain of how things kind of transpired, but it doesn't matter. We still wind up where we wind up.
Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately, as commercial real estate investors, we got hit hard by this. And it's funny, you look at, I'm sure you follow like ITR Economics, right? They're kind of a less, they're actually a real news source, I consider them, but they've got the sine curve of all the different industries and asset classes on there. And what you see is the financial and housing are at the bottom right now and actually coming back up. So it's actually a good time to be investing and jumping into the game now, especially on the right deals. If you pick the right deals on rescue capital or mezz debt, those are the best deals. But the rest of the economy are still up top, haven't taken that ride down yet.
I'll give you this one comment on this. So I call it, we experiencing deep recession in the commercial real estate. And I just be very specific. And commercial real estate, of course, that includes office, which we've done very little in that space, but multifamily and other commercial, like storage, industrial, is what we've done quite a bit of. But the commercial in general is in deep recession because it's heavily dependent on the interest rates. Crazy enough, residential real estate is doing well. So residential real estate, because of this balance of the supply and demand, a lot of residential properties, even though demand has fallen off, but the supply has also been super weak. So that aside, of course, it's a deep recession in the commercial real estate, while the entire other economy is yet to see the recession. And it's coming. It's kind of crazy, but I even had a discussion where we want the recession. We want two negative quarters of GDP. If you're in a commercial space, you're kind of sitting there and praying for this as much as you know, I'm not wishing anyone to lose the job and to be negative. But without it, the Fed is moving super slow. They need to see enough of general economic recession to start easing. So they're taking that sweet time. And because they're taking that time, the commercial industry, real estate industry is in pain. But let me go to the follow-up discussion. So do you see strong opportunities to invest freshly today? And really, I only see two opportunities. You tell me if you see something else. One, let's just call them deep discount deals, deep buys, meaning that these properties have gone bad. The banks are foreclosed, received the property through cooperative transfer like deed in lieu, or will receive it, and they'll be willing to take a significant haircut. And as a buyer, you can get those deep discounts, assuming that the sellers, the banks, will agree. So it's basically deep buys, which is not yet happening in volume, but it certainly looks like a potential great opportunity. And two is this rescue capital in the form of mass financing of sorts, where you can come in, the deal still looks decent enough, and come in and push all previous money back out and try to take advantage of the situation. And that money is opportunistic. The mass financing is not coming in to do nothing else to try to save a sinking ship. The deal has to make sense. It has to feel safe enough for the mass money to come in or for the rescue capital to come in. So those are the two buckets I see. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I like that second one. I'll refute the first one first. I mean, I think I see a lot of deals out there that syndicators will put out like, hey, we found a deal that's 30% discount, right? But with, again, reason why we're not buying anything is I can't make the debt work, right? Like I'm still picking things up with lower leverage. The numbers just aren't penciling there. And I think what you were alluding to is like, yeah, okay, so maybe some of these assets go through the process, they get foreclosed on by the bank or deed in lieu or whatever. The problem there is picking those properties up is it's been neglected for months upon months. I mean, maybe I'm just speaking for myself. Like, we don't like to pick up distressed assets, things under 85, 80% occupied. And that's what's going to happen when it goes through receivership and goes through, things aren't being fixed. The lights are barely kept on at the property. You know, there's no property manager to keep tenants in line, and just the property goes to crap, quite frankly, right? So I think if you're an operator who makes a living on picking up those more distressed properties, yeah, there's going to be great opportunities for you to pick up. Me personally, I don't like that type of stuff. So that's why I'm kind of discrediting that option one. But what I'm for number two, the way I look at it is if I can pick up a property before it gets dilapidated, goes to crap, and just gets, mismanaged because nobody's managing it, as the bank and the previous buyer, previous seller are figuring out what they're going to do for 3, 6 months plus, that's when I want to pick up the property before the property just drops in performance. But you've got to kind of be sophisticated and get yourself at the right table to swoop up those, let's call it pre-foreclosure properties. I don't know. I haven't figured out a better term for this, but to pick it up when it hasn't kind of started to rot, and you can get a good discount on it. And that's kind of where I think that's the opportunities. But you've got to come and, obviously you have to have your underwriting team underwrite it to make sure that the cash injection, whether that's $3 million or $10 million, is going to get you to dry land. Essentially, you never want to build a bridge to nowhere, and you want to get this thing to where it is. And specifically, I call that getting to perm debt, not rate caps, nothing like that. Just get this thing to straight perm debt, and then you've kind of built yourself a 5, 10 year plus bridge. And by that time, never say never, forward-looking statements, blah, blah, blah. We can probably safely assume that interest rates will somewhat normalize and cap rates will somewhat normalize 5, 10 years from now.
I agree with you 100%. Lane, you're a super sharp guy, and I agree with you that whatever the financing, whatever additional capital needs to be brought, it needs to have a clear, extremely well-buffered path to get to a full stabilization and refinance with the long-term agency debt. I concur with that statement 100%. With no, what I don't like to see is, hey, it's a capital call to get us for the next 3 months or next 6 months. That's a terrible situation. Because you're going to just throw good money after bad and be sure to have a bigger problem in 6 months. So if you're writing a check today, you got to write a check into a deal that not only has a plan, but has a plan buffered by like 50%, where you're raising not just enough money, you're raising 50% more than just enough money to get it to the point, whatever the business plan, to get it to full stabilization. And we've seen volatility in performance. Folks project whatever you project, things always go worse. Well, not always, but they often go worse. So preparing for what you just explained, a business plan that's more conservative, takes longer, requires more dollars. If the numbers still work, then you have a chance. If the numbers don't work, then you can't do that type of a deal because you're not building a bridge to a safe island, but you're building a bridge. And it stops in the middle of the ocean, and then you still have a problem.
And it becomes a very, I'm going to be careful using this word because people always like use it in the wrong context, but it becomes a very safe deal at that point. As long as you can, guy in your position can raise the X amount of dollars, $5 million, it becomes very safe and almost a no-brainer type of deal. The problem is, well, what if you only raise $3 out of $5 million and you don't get there? Well, hopefully your deal sponsor should just call it a non-launch and not launch the rocket that day.
So what you're saying is there better be a budget for the full plan, business plan, with a significant buffer. Otherwise, it's like a space shuttle. You either have the tanks loaded and you're ready to send it out because you can't, you can't launch it with 90% of the fuel. 90% of the fuel gets you 90% there, and you don't reach a stable orbit and you fall. So from that perspective, for sure, there needs to be full business and full financial plan.
Yeah.
So
I'll use a specific example that we are working through right now. We bought a property 2021. We worked, I think, majority through the business plan. We'll call it that. So higher rents, better NOI. But the damn thing is worth the same thing we bought it for, right? Because the market came down. We were able to, work a refinance on this asset. Basically neutral refinance. So you don't got to put money in, yet we're not taking money out. But investors ask, like, all right, are we safe? And I tell them, well, blah, 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 forward-looking statements. But you know what? We're going into like a I believe that one, like 6 year loan, and we're cash flowing on a month-to-month basis.
Oh, you
Like
survived.
There are no sure things in life, but damn it, I feel pretty confident in that one, right? Like the idea of you know, like you're trying to grab bodies and put it up shore, right? And you go down, you grab the next one. You know, the guy's wounded, he can't move. Is the water gonna come up and get him wet? We don't know. But at some point you're kind of like, well, if this guy is kind of moving on its own, or you know, switching back to the real life analogy of rental of properties, is this apartment building is cash flowing right now, and it's got 6 years to continue to make that progress, they're gonna be all right, right? Like
Most likely, yes. Yes.
barring
As long as
zombie
the occupancy doesn't
apocalypses or
drop, as long as something really bad doesn't happen, if you maintain stable environment with stable debt, you should be able to survive.
right. And that's the situation that you're in rescue capital mode, you're coming in on that type of investment vehicle with other investors. If your money gets infused in to get that property to a, you know, cash flow positive situation, maybe it improves the debt service ratio to over 1%, and you have a long period of time. I always say, like, anything less than 4 year term is a little short. And that's my lesson learned from this whole experience. 5 years or greater, that's kind of an attorney in commercial real estate.
Yeah, agreed. At least what we're seeing on the mass debt side, most of the sponsors believe they'll get there way faster. But if you are providing capital in the back of your head, you have to prepare that even if the project stabilizes, it's going to need more time. So the smart sponsors are asking for whatever the financing, if it's a loan for 3 year term with an extension of another year to allow for 4 years. And I know it sounds kind of long in this environment, but if you don't ask for this, you just don't know when you're going to get to stabilization. And you know, we all hope, and well, it used to be survive until 25, now survive until 26, right? And we just don't know. What if the government continues to print money? What if the Fed is forced to keep interest rates at the elevated level to keep fighting the inflation that they are not creating, but the fiscal policy is creating? And the fiscal policy is, we know, we are in a danger zone where the deficits have gotten bigger and bigger. So it's kind of things we can't control, but if you give it enough time, inferior real estate, at least it has worked for a long, long time, and it will most likely continue to work. But short duration is the risk for sure.
Yeah.
So any other quick thoughts? This has obviously been a very real conversation. We've talked about projects and that have experienced difficulties. We have some of these projects. You have some of these projects. Many people have some of these projects. If you're everyone and anyone in the last couple of years, if you've done anything, you're probably experiencing something to that degree. And if you're not experiencing this and you've been investing in 21, 22, you may be running a Bernie Madoff shop, right? I mean, because the reality is you're not immune to the tidal wave or the 150-year flood that hit us all, right? That's the real conversation. Any other final thoughts? And again, we're not saying this as part of the discussion to scare anyone, but not knowing that you got a cancer or you're very sick, and you go to the doctor, ignorance doesn't solve the problem. So at least if you know what you're dealing with, it gets a step number one.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about the deals that got originated over the last couple years, with floating debt or debt renewing in less than 3 or 4 years. I mean, still the majority of my portfolio was purchased prior to that with fixed rate debt longer than 5, 6 years plus. So they're totally out of sight, out of mind in a way. And
How
I
about
think
maturity
that's
cliff? Are you facing any maturity cliff on any of the deals? Because one is a floating rate debt. Obviously, that's a problem. But I'm just curious, the other problem that's hitting us all, if you took a loan 2019, 5 years later on a fixed rate, you took a 4 year mortgage, now it's, you know, 675. Is that just I'm just curious if you're seeing this or where you know a lot of people, but maturity cliff is a real problem too.
You know, I think if you bought a property prior to 2021, you know, you didn't get that full 30% drop, right? Like you bought it before it started to go up. So the differential, it's kind of confusing when you first think about it,
30% from the
but
peak. You didn't buy it, so the drop is
yeah,
30% from the peak.
it didn't go up, you know, it didn't go up then come down. So the price that you bought, your basis was
It's
strong
good.
enough. And that's kind of where You know, a lot of this seems very daunting, but if you just spread your portfolio over 4 to 7 years, you'll be all right with this type of stuff. And that's kind of the situation overall that I'm in. You know, obviously you don't want to sell any of those assets at this point because you're selling it at a lower price, but that's kind of the reality of it. And I'd say it's a great, it's unfortunate for investors in those last couple of years, right? It's kind of like, you know, bad year in the wine industry, right? There was fires in California, you got a lot of rosé and smoky wine. It's just, that's unfortunately how it is. But if for people coming in now, this is like probably one of the best times you could ever. It's like 2012, 2011 all over again.
Yeah, let's focus on this. Let's focus on the positive. So I concur with you that we are looking at the upcoming recovery. The term is participation in the recovery. So today, folks that coming in with fresh capital, if it's well underwritten and with the right sponsors and operators in the right markets, the recovery could be substantial. And the participation in the recovery, it's buying deep. It's basically respecting market cycle, coming in sort of at the bottom of the market cycle for commercial real estate and picking up these assets, ideally at a really good basis points. So for the fresh money, it's kind of could be phenomenal opportunity to participate. But the difficult part, and I would love to hear your thoughts. So obviously, fresh capital, great opportunity. I strongly believe so. But if you wrote checks in the last couple of years, your experience is you're hurt. You're hurt here, you're hurt there, you have a lot of bleeding. And now people are telling you, well, put the fresh money out because you got great opportunities. And you are praying to get recovery on your old money. It's kind of like either new investors got to come in with fresh dollars who don't have the difficult experience, or investors who have some problem files or problem investments need to have the courage to understand those investments are underwater, but the fresh ones could be great.
Yeah. I mean, that's the recency bias. I mean, I don't fault anybody for just being, you know, doing nothing and licking your wounds. And as your spouse tells you, you're going to go lose another bunch of money, right? Like, I get it. I totally get it. But, you know, life is unforgiving, right? You do what you do, you move on, you have some lessons learned, you keep going. I mean, this is no different than, like, I when I graduated college back in 2007, I was lucky. I had a job, and when the big recession came, I was able to hold it. And when things opened up, the job market opened up again, I was kind of lucky. But there were, you know, some of my younger friends, a couple years younger, they went head on into the recession and couldn't find jobs. They're screwed. And then when people graduate in 2011, 2012, in a way, those are like the new investors today. They're totally unaware of the carnage that happened just a year or two ago. But that life's unfair like that. I mean, and that's hard for new investors to take. I mean, you have to diversify over 4 to 7 years to be immune to these types of things. And that's why I say, like, you know, you kind of mentioned, I think I hear what you're saying, Mike. Like, there's a lot of investors out there who will say, like, oh, so-and-so sponsor has not had anything. Well, they don't even have 10 deals under their belt, right? We've done 60 something plus deals. You bet things are going to go wrong. If you don't want to lose money, please don't talk to me, right? That's not how this industry works, right? I mean, things are going to happen. But you try and like position yourself. Some of the more conservative investors, maybe the play is to only go into 5, 6 year plus, you know, term debt. You know, you're not going to get 18, 25% IRRs. You're not going to double your money every 5 years doing that. But you have to ask what kind of investor you are.
Yeah, it's a great wisdom that number of folks that went into these deals didn't realize that a loss is possible last few years. It's a difficult environment, and being ultra conservative investor doesn't mean you made ultra conservative decisions. Last few years, kind of bright and shiny objects and high return opportunities have given investors sort of an incentive to participate, but the risk is still there. So folks have thought that investing in real estate is risk-free. They were delusional in a manner of speaking. And even firstly in debt, some deals go upside down. You have a risk of some haircut in even in debt. So there's a possibility. There's a risk in everything. But I go back and I think a little bit about And I know we're running out of time, so just a couple of quick comments. And I go back and I think about what you said. You kind of need to invest over 4 to 7 year period. There's a good old rule or a good old technique how you invest called dollar cost average. You invest over time. You diversify in time because you just don't know. And that technique, dollar cost average, is used in the stock market. It is still applicable in real estate. And folks who just thought that they'd come in and write a check all during a short period of time, if you time the market well, you are in great shape. But if the market was timing was terrible, then you're feeling the pain. And the most difficult thing is to acknowledge that you hit bad timing or it was a mistake, and then you can get significantly discouraged from writing a check when the opportunity is actually right for the right capital. So again, this is not designed for anything other than provide some wisdom for folks to think about if they've experienced challenging market conditions. What do? Do you sit and blame somebody, where you learn and adjust and adapt? And I know it's going to be very difficult for folks who are near retirement or already in retirement and they got all their capital deployed. I absolutely understand and respect it. And they don't have the extra timing and the opportunity. They deploy the capital at the wrong time. It's tough. And the reverse could be true. If you enter the market right after severe correction, you are entering into the kind of golden opportunity and without knowing this. So it is a wisdom of investing, is to diversify over time.
We got guys like they started in 2018 to 2020 and they invested all their money and they're like, well, what's happening in real estate now? Is it not doing as good as I hear, right? Like they're totally oblivious to the stuff that's happening, and it's not that they're smarter, it's just that they are lucky.
Because they picked up enough upside, but still some of those deals can have challenges too. I'll give you one quick comment and gotta run. It's a building in Brooklyn that I'm the president. It's a condo association. So basically, to make a long story short, I was refinancing the building where I have some apartments. And to make a long story short, there was an option to refi for 5 years. As you know, commercial real estate, a lot of loans for five and loans for 10. And the 5 year rate was 4%. And a 10-year rate fixed 10 years was 4.3. And somehow I was fortunate enough, lucky to take 10 years. I don't claim great wisdom. I just say great luck that somehow I went for 10 years. And I'm sure that is just a massive savings mechanism, protection mechanism. And there's plenty of people from 2018, 19 who took those loans for 5 years. Now they're maturing. And you may be right, the values have increased. And then they've come down. But refi transactions right now, even with increased and decreased values, still more difficult than if this didn't happen up and down. So you're right that some people are probably not feeling the pain if they wrote the checks 18, 19, but it's borderline. I think the deals from 18, 19, maybe 20, some of them are fine and some might have some challenges, but 21, 22 is the 2 years that are heavily problem years.
No, you bring up a good point. I mean, even more so, there's a little bit of luck to it, especially when you're starting out, when you haven't bridged your portfolio over 4 years plus.
Yeah, and then if you did it over many years and you would have diversified, taken some chips off the table, then you'd be in a phenomenally better shape. And those who are ch taking chips off the table, as interest rates climb, they basically exited deals and put the money in treasuries. And plenty of investors are sitting completely, in great position with a safety margin. So, Lane, appreciate your wisdom. We are past the time. How would folks get a hold of you if they wanted to reach out, have a conversation with you, any follow-up?
Yeah, they can shoot me an email, lane@thewealthelevator.com, or I usually have a little video log where I kind of talk about these types of things. They can check out the podcast, The Wealth Elevator. But yeah, thanks for having me, Mike.
Lane@thewealthelevator.com. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing, Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.